We welcome you to the Portfolio Committee on Arts and Culture. We appreciate the fact that you accepted a nomination and you also responded positively to the invitation to come to this session. We don't take that lightly. It shows patriotism, it shows love for the nation. Because it's not about us as a Portfolio Committee, it's not about who we are. It's not about Panthers itself, but it's about the nation. Language is there. It's about who we are as a nation. So we really appreciate the fact that you are here. We are going to introduce ourselves as the panelists. And thereafter, we're going to afford you an opportunity to introduce yourself. You're going to tell us who you are and just briefly about your expertise, your area of expertise, and where you see you can, contribute, yes, thank you, to this very important institution that is Panthers. And then you tell us your journey briefly and just a beautiful marketing for you to market yourself to us. We have 45 minutes for the interview. After we have introduced ourselves, when you start to introduce yourself, the clock is going to start ticking. And then you will introduce yourself. It will be more or less 5 minutes, but it depends on you. And then we will ask questions. And at the end, we will be given, because the clock is always over there, where they're going to tell us the time is up and we will inform you. I am Pauline Sotom, the chairperson of the Portfolio Committee on Arts and Culture.
Good afternoon, sir. My name is Thomas Makondo, member of the Portfolio Committee on Arts and Culture.
My name is Bongi Masichaba Kalese, I'm a member of this portfolio.
Good afternoon. My name is Alan Fuerto, I'm a member of this committee.
Thank you very much. We are done. As our panelists, you can introduce
yourself. Good afternoon, chairman members. It's certainly a pleasure to be here. I know it's Friday afternoon, and I'm glad you're running a little bit late because I really battled to get in and find the place, but people were very kind to me and led me to here. I was slightly late, but from the point of view that you were running late, I was slightly ready. I'm a registered accountant and auditor, so a professional, and a lot of the work that I do now is in government boards and governance committees for state government, like audit committees, risk committees, finance committees, ethics committees. Certain amount of the work that I do is for Department of Arts and Culture. For example, I'm chair of the audit committee of the Zika Museums of South Africa, and I have been on their council. So I've done a certain amount of work for the department. Important to me from a career point of view, and I think everybody's career, is they move from the rudiments and the technical abilities to the more advanced technical abilities, but after that they move to the human skills. And they move more towards, the people move more towards committee work, and you people in Parliament are actually part of committees. And that's where the pooling of the knowledge and the input gets to a greater value than the inputs, so the outputs are greater than the input. When I looked at this committee, I was slightly saddened from the point of view that it had been discontinued and needed to be resurrected. Previously, I was appointed to the Road Traffic Management Corporation, or PNC, where in fact I served, and that was also a resurrected board. And when you're serving on a board that's been resurrected, you need to give greater input to allow for the greater outputs, because the history has been a little bit lost, which is disappointing. Also important to me is moving from the technicalities into what the organization does. And here what we're looking at, and I did my research, as you can see, related to the Act and the mandate which would be given to the board. And it became very clear to me the 11 languages, and the fact that the Constitution allows for those 11 languages, and that people can be supported from the point of view of their culture and their heritage related to their languages. Also, the people that are minorities outside of the 11 languages also need to be supported and not thwarted. And then there's a third one, and perhaps even a fourth one. And the third one is that there are foreign languages which are not our languages, and they also need to be respected. But the fourth one that I want to raise, and this is because I come from a business background, is the fact that the international languages tends to have been English, but emerging very much is languages from the East, because of the large number of people coming from the East, and perhaps even India. Other people would talk about French, because French is spoken from the business point of view into Africa and overseas. And I see that as a place where this total contribution can be made through this board and maintained through this board. And in fact, the harmony can be created through this board, through the Act and the mandate of the Act. So I'm really here to look at the core mandate and the core objectives, and to make a contribution to that, to ensure that the board is attained and retained and maintained, and then any input that's needed from the governance point of view, and any other puts that are needed, in other words, not from a language point of view, but from a finance point of view, and a sustainability from a breadth point of view, and the input from committee members is also important to me, because I'm not just a finance person. Whatever we do in the service departments has to match properly with the core delivery. So there's another aspect to me as well. And I'm going to leave it at that. I don't need 5 minutes. I'm a Virgo. I don't speak forever. My wife does.
Thank you very much. I'm not going to give an opportunity to the panelists to ask questions. And then we ask the questions to you.
Good afternoon, Mr. Nicole. Then you are going to have a problem. Maybe you should have brought your wife along. Tell me, you have got a past experience, especially in the Audit Committee. So I want you to tell me if you have ever got into a compromising situation where you have been caught by other board members or audit committee members that you might have been working with, which kind of maybe wanted to damage your reputation. Have you ever been in that situation?
Yeah.
The answer is yes, I have. And I think all of us that have served like me have been in that situation more than once. Okay. And I think there are two things which are particularly important. The one is what I'm going to call the formal, or the legislation, or the rules. And the second one is what I'm going to call the personal approach, the mediation, the arbitration approach. So let me start with the second one first. I'm now getting to not necessarily what happened in an example, but the approach to handle that particular type of situation. Particularly important is the common ground. How much common ground is there? The other person's point of view might be on the one side, your point of view might be on the other. But I think very much there's a reason, there's a need and a reason to compromise. Some things you need to prioritize, in some cases you shouldn't compromise or you can't compromise. I just want to give you an incident of the more formal side, in other words, number one or number two. I had a situation in an audit committee where, in fact, I had a tremendous concern related to a board and board actions and individuals on the board. And I took opinion on that as to what I could do as chairperson of the audit committee and a legal opinion. And the legal opinion was very telling to me, in fact, it taught me a lesson in life. It said, and as audit committee chair, you are responsible to the board, and you cannot go outside of that, unless you have an authority which allows you to go outside of that. So if there's theft and you have to report it to the police and the treasury, you can do that. But until you've got that authority, you're responsible to the board, and you have to deal with it as an individual with the board chair or board members or whatever it is, which pushes you to number two in the mediation. I think the most important thing is that you heard, other people understand your point of view, but I also think at the end of the day, you need to move on with the consensus, the best advantage of everybody. And I think that's the best way to respond to you want to call it a question to your question and your statements. Thank you.
Because the reason I'm asking this question is that you at all the times when you are doing your oversight responsibilities over the executive of the entity, you need to be ethical in your conduct. And also display a form of integrity. You are the man of the team. So that you don't find yourself being compromised. In the main, that it happens to the officials. You know, they can coerce you to do wrong things. And once you do it once, then the blame you will continue to do it forever and ever. Then you become an enabler of corruption in the system. When you arrived, you had an integrity and you were ethical. And by just one little mistake, and they compromise you. So how are you going to deal with that situation?
Make two statements related to that. I'm glad you didn't talk about morals, or I'm glad you spoke about ethics. Okay. I think morals relate to individuals. Okay. For example, some people might have a religious morality. When we talk about ethics, we talk about something for everybody. It applies to everybody. People need to be treated fairly. I live my life about every day, and I wake up first thing in the morning, and as I go through my day, because of the background I come from, because of the differences I experience, and my lack of knowledge of people on the other side, because I've never lived their life or circumstance, I keep on saying respect to myself, and I keep on smiling. And those two things have carried me through with many people. people that assisted me to get to this venue. I've respected them. They do a good job. And I really knew entirely. I was taught by a gentleman that was trained in the police when I worked at Zappening and Shipping Company. And he made exactly that statement to me. Don't accept anything, because once you've accepted one thing, no matter how small, okay, you're on the wrong road. And I'm lucky today, because whenever I've had my fingerprints taken for jobs like gambling or they can't find a past history of anything wrong. Okay. Doesn't mean I'm perfect, but I haven't crossed the bad boundary, which is particularly fortunate. I've also dealt with a lot of corruption in my government work, and the answer I want to give related to that is there are two things in life which are important. The what, I don't accept me, but how I deal with the thief is important. The thief still needs to be respected from a personal point of view. You don't have to respect the theft.
And at this time I could hear that you were able to say already, because now I said, let me change, because you said you are the board member of the Central Resistive Technology. And the whole spoken language says Soto. So Dumela is Soto, it's the same as Molwedi. So I assumed that because you are in that part of the country where a lot of the language that is predominantly spoken is so true, to be followed by Africans, to be followed by Zulu. I'm not going to say much about English, because everybody can, but these are the languages that are most spoken in the area that I'm also coming from, by the way. So, You said in your opening remarks that you have done an extensive research about the camps of African language groups. You even mentioned the mandate, the intervention to the promotion of all the language, the official languages, including the sign language, the indigenous languages, and so on, and other languages that are Now, I would want to, unfortunately now, because you are in that mode of an institution that is diverse, an institution that has got different people that are coming from different backgrounds, I move from the assumption that you understand, as much as you might not speak all those languages, but you understand the concept of multilingualism, the stance that government has taken in order to make sure that South Africa, because of its diverse nature in terms of the languages that are there, it seeks to make sure that at least all South Africans should be multilingual. Now, we in these 24 years, we have slightly moved, especially in the private sector. We are still not doing good work in the private sector in terms of the promotion of multilingualism. If you are appointed in the board of CANSAR, let's assume that tomorrow you will be appointed, and there's this mandate that you have to carry as a board member, what do you think you are going to do better in order to make sure that multilingualism is embraced by everybody, especially the private sector?
Thank you for that question. The place that I've experienced it, just starting with what you're saying, I'm on the audit committee of the Cape Town City Council, which is the first time I had the experience of Afrikaans and an African language being included in all the board papers for council and the papers for us, and they had the green papers and the white papers and all that. And then when I was elected to the audit committee of Langeberg, I found it the same. And when I was elected to the audit committee of Drakensberg, and you're not allowed to have more than three, so I'm only on three, but Drakensberg is exactly the same. And I've never seen it in commerce, the fact that people are addressed, excepting that it's starting to happen. For example, I fly a tremendous amount because I live in Cape Town, and serving at CUT, I now have to fly via Joburg to get to Bloemfontein, and that's because of our aircraft problem. But the point I'm making is, the announcement by the person on the aeroplane, they are saying that the hostesses that we have today can address you in the following languages. So if you want to call a hostess in a specific language, you know, and we can address you in English, we can address you in Sotho, we can address you in Xhosa, and we can address you in German. Something like that. And I really enjoy that from the point of view that they mentioned you with. I think that commerce, talking about old mutuals and whatever, and they're starting to do it, but not enough. And the way to handle that, if you look at what King has done for the triple bottom line, is to actually go through and make it something for the Institute of Directors. The Institute of Directors is really philosophical, and I happen to be a fellow member there, and it's how I actually got into my field work. And they have a maturity whereby they're looking at the clean and green and the effect on the environment. And this is part of the environment, which is languages and heritage at that time. So there are ways and means and mechanisms already in place which we could use to multiply the effect and make it a requirement and perhaps even make it a challenge from the point of view of compliance related to ensuring that multilingualism becomes a lot more important. Also important is the fact that it becomes focused. So, for example, if you've got a series of forms to be filled in and you're in the Eastern Cape, it might be English and Xhosa only. And that doesn't matter because you're covering 96% of the people that will be filling in the forms. So, I think besides being practical, I think the philosophy is 100% right. And I think it needs to be part of the social obligation and the selling point for commerce as part of the product and the effort towards the triple bottom line.
Okay, thank you. What's your understanding of status of the international clause in line with constitution, section 6 of the constitution, in government department and university? What do you think is the role of CESA to ensure that the business levels get used to? I'm glad that you are at the board of the university. So what do you think will be your role if you are appointed to be in the central board, your role in making sure that these indigenous languages are being used or they are accorded the same data as other languages?
Thank you for that. I think there are a number of pros and cons here. While you were speaking, I was thinking about, and I can't quote you exactly, but I'm thinking of the statement that Nelson Mandela made to the effect that when you address a person in their own language, you get right to their heart. Whereas if you just address them, you in fact, your words might well go a little past them. I haven't got it 100% right, but I think it's very relevant to what you're saying. We have an opportunity at the moment because the majority of universities are targeting online education. And it's easier with online education to be able to tap into, I'm English, I want the English version, I'm Xhosa, I want the Xhosa version. So there's an opportunity there just because of digitization. The UNISA approach, I'm going to call it. Certainly CUT is looking at doing some of that. And just as a complete aside, one of the problems that universities have is that people complete all but one course and therefore they have to go back to university for another year, or on the corners, waste another year, take a place in a hostel for another year, or residency for another year, and take somebody else's place. And when you go online, you can allow that person to start to work, or to work from home, and pass that last course and graduate. So I'm putting that together with the language opportunity. But I also think it's particularly important that people are nurtured when they get into the residences, from the point of view that on the campus they always have societies. And you could have the Sutu Society and the Corsa Society and the English Society and the Afrikaans Society. So there are opportunities for those people to keep their culture going, to strengthen the university. Because the university successes that they have in engineering and science and even in art and whatever, and the researchers that they make, certain of the faculties are doing research related to culture, related to heritage, and related to language. But beyond that, those successes need to go out into what I'm going to call the rural and the urban. And you need to be able to do that to target the correct people that the people understand. And that fits together with the fact that people can, and we're going into a subsistence society because of the lack of jobs and because people are backing to feed themselves. I mean, those percentages are alarming. So there is a big responsibility from the university point of view, but it does come back to language. You can't talk to those people that are there about agriculture and subsistence farming unless you talk in their own language. So you need those students going back to their father. I think there's a truth. You know, the other thing I'll tell you about is I've been doing quite a lot of work in risk management. And you know, every worst risk ends up in an opportunity. And Jesus was the opportunity in South Africa to act. You get to people's hearts through the language that they do.
Thank you.
Thank you, Chair. Good afternoon, Mr. Nichols. In line of your understanding of this of the Council Board, what is the mandate of FANCEL as relates to the FANCEL African Language Board Act of 1995 and the Constitution of the Republic of South Africa? Can you explain your understanding of that mandate?
I'm going to have the second question because I wasn't being rude when I was going to say, shall I read it to you? Because it was important to me that I understood what I was coming for. Okay. But I'm going to go back to the introduction, and I think that's important. The first thing I realized when I read this page, and it doesn't talk about the 11 languages, but I know that they're 11 official languages. It also talks about tying the Act into the Constitution, and we all know that the Constitution sits above the Act. So you still have a right over and above this particular Act, which is the Constitution. And I certainly think that they're both important. Also important to me was what I'm going to call the minorities that aren't included in the letter. And I certainly don't want them to be left out in some way. I don't think it's the right thing to do. I also mentioned that there are foreign languages, and I think we need to look at that. And if I can sit back and say, because I'm an accountant and auditor and I deal a lot with commerce and business, the factor of what we need today is international relations. Previously mentioned was this sign language. And when we see sign language, we see it in Parliament. We saw it at Mandela's funeral. And those things are important. But we see it very little outside of that. And I think enshrined in here is just a guide. And in fact, it's a spirit to go further. A spirit not only to focus, but become a lot broader, a lot deeper. related to the whole breadth of responsibility that we have. I come back to the word respect. All languages need to be respected because they actually stand for something for the people.
Nicholas, given your response in terms of the respect for the other languages, how would you then go forward to promote languages that are marginalized, like the Hawaiian, the Sign language, etc.?
I don't often like to say this, but let me speak as a board member. There are a number of times in the board that the content is not exactly me. The first thing you need to do is you need to listen very carefully to what other people are saying. You need to require the staff to do a little bit of, I'm going to use the word research, as to what's been done already, what was successful, what was not successful. You can't sweep it under the carpet, that is wrong. But I think you need to create correct mechanisms as a collective of the language board. And then plan the way future, into the future, using what we call the parliamentary method of 1 year and 3 years, and perhaps even the 5 year cycle. And then to ensure that that rolls out properly, and we have to move input, outputs, outcomes, but more importantly, impact. And that's the way to handle it. I haven't got an answer, but we need to create an answer as a collective. And that's the contribution.
Thank you very much.
As a member of the board, how would you deal with that matter?
you come in today as a member of the board, there's a situation. How would you advise that?
Thank you for that question. And let me start with my preference. Certainly in the meeting I've done and looking at the mandate coming from the Act and the objectives coming from the Act and then just looking at the language of clauses in the Constitution, which that relates to. My preference is it actually comes through the appointment, and my reason for saying that in the work that I've done in museums and heritage, I think it's particularly important that language is actually part of that. I am very proud of going into museums and seeing a lot of the struggle and Sisulu and those sort of things, not only pictures but artifacts and whatever, and bringing things back up from overseas and dealing with remains and the ethics of that. So I do think that language fits together with heritage and what the department was in cultural history. And in a lot of cases, they're doing very good work. So my preference is to actually have files there. I would be disappointed if, in fact, I was in the situation that conflict is holding the board back, stopping it achieving on its objectives and its rollout. That would be disappointing to me. So, but in fact, if people feel strongly and eventually, if we look at the lawyers, get it in place that it was direct and that's what we need to do. And we can still do our rollout properly and we can still achieve our objectives properly, then so be it, I would be relaxed on it. But I do have a definite preference. Certainly I don't want to get involved in the executive because it's detracting.
The reason that institution is put forward is the independence of TransCal, because TransCal is supposed to be an independent institution that oversees over the use of language given from the Department of Arts and Culture. So the argument is that how do you oversee a person that is, that perceives him or herself as the parent of the pillar of disability. So that I think the board will be charged with that responsibility. That's the first thing that they will be charged with, to look at the Constitution, look at the Act, and look at all these issues of independence. How are we going to be independent if we are given money from government? I think it's important for you to be aware of that in case you are appointed, because we don't do that.
Chair, I'd like to respond to that, and I'd like to respond as an auditor and the chairperson of an audit committee. An audit committee is required to have absolute independence. At the same time, if audit findings are not moved towards correction and eventually value or impact, you might as well not have the audit finding. To draw the parallel, if this board has certain findings and doesn't have a mechanism to move it or to report it into a mechanism that can move it to value and impact, that would be disappointing. And I think that's a role that the Department of Arts and Culture can play in putting language together with heritage and history. And therefore, I think you can have the independence, but also the mechanism to create the positive change from your findings. Thank you, Chair.
Chances
can't think of anything, no. You know, normally conflicts relate to supply chain management. So you caught me a bit there because now it relates to my thinking related to languages. And I think the answer is to listen carefully and apply yourself. I can't think of anything which is conflict. Certainly not permanent conflict. I have nothing against any language.
No, I was not referring to language, but conflict is interest. Being maybe a close friend of the CEO of the board of Fansub, and now you're a member of the board, and then I think the same question that my colleague asked in terms of how would you mitigate if there's conflict between the executive and the board.
Great, thank you. Thank you for that explanation. First of all, I don't know anybody in the triangle below the board. Secondly, I think it's important that the board is responsible for strategy, and that strategy would relate to the 3-year plan and the 1-year plan on performance that is coming from management, the executive. KPIs and KPIs, so that's how we're going to achieve that. Also related to the risks. The risks are in the area of delivery, and those risks need to be mitigated. So the answer is I don't have any conflict in that particular area at all. And I do think that we need to hear what management is saying. We need to provide the guidance and the steering from a broad point of view. And we need to ensure that delivery relates to the strategy which is necessary, and that the strategy is in alignment with the objectives of the Act and the Constitution, and then the actuality in the, what we call in the field, in the environment.
Thank you. Another one? And was the question on the issue of prime language, how if you can, if we will be appointed
into the normal language mechanisms of universities and faculties. Once again, I would look at digitization to teach people, those people which want to do it as a hobby, towards being able to speak another language. And I think that's particularly important that you create those videos and those apps and whatever to assist you. And it's quite interesting when you look at a language, they say if you understand 40 words and sentences, you start to just speak the language properly. So, I think that should be important as another language, an important language, and something that you need to get by on. You know, if you were going overseas to a specific country where you can't speak the language, you might want to spend 3 or 4 weeks just with the tutorial to be able to get by there. I think everybody needs to get by on the sign language. And those people need to be targeted. They are closer to the need of sign language as well. So I think a phased approach is possible and to be encouraged.
Thank you. Thank you very much. And that we are concluding the interview, we once more want to appreciate the fact that you are here for this very important task, because it's a task that is, as the portfolio committee, it has been working us for the full term. And we are hoping that the board that is going to be replaced will be the legacy that we leave behind, because we are going towards the end of the season. The importance of this board can never be, you know, you never overestimate the importance of this board. Because as I said earlier, it has to do with who we are. We are not going to be who we are. So we really appreciate the people that are like yourself, that have availed themselves for the interview, and we really applaud their partnership, because it has to do with the nation, it has to do with the nation, not with any of us. We are going, when we are done the interview, we are going to collect information, make recommendations to the minister, and it's the department that will come back to you and inform you if you made the target, the board or not. And we wish you well, and we wish you all the best. Thank you very much for having me.
Thank you, Chair, and from the hot seat, do you have a presentation?
Mm-hmm.